standby, please?
Let me ask you this. What, no, am I just answers. Respond? Is that it? Or
why don't you tell before we get rolling, tell them what we're doing here.
We say, this is Hall of Famer Ralph Kiner, born October 27, 1922, in Santa Rita, New Mexico. And Ralph, we'd like you to take it from there. Tell us about your first years and your first baseball experiences, please.
Well, my mother was a nurse in World War One. As a matter of fact, she was in France in World War One. She came out of the service and was a nurse in a hospital in Fort Baird, New Mexico, and met my father, who was a baker one time in New Mexico, and then later on became a steam shovel operator at Santa Rita, New Mexico, which was the, I believe, the largest open pit copper mine in the States. And I was born in 1922, and obviously no recollection of my father, who died when I was 4 and a half years old. And oddly enough, he died of a mastoid infection, which of course today would be nothing. Be cured in a short time. My mother then moved to California, and she had a friend that lived in a town called Alhambra, California, and at the age of five, I was living there and was raised in that area. And fortunately for me, it was a neighborhood town. It was kind of a bedroom town of L.A., Los Angeles. And we had vacant lots and what have you, and I had neighbors that had one son that was maybe, let's see, he would be 5 years older than I. And I used to go out and shag balls while his father pitched to him, and he would hit. And along about, I guess, about a month of shagging balls with this kid, I said, I'm going to quit unless you let me hit. And so they said, okay, it's your turn now. And that's really how I got started to play baseball. And I was at a very early age. I would have been about 9 years old or 10. And we had, in the grammar schools in California, we had a lot of softball games. And I played an awful lot of fast pitch softball. And that was really the basis of my playing. But at the same time, I still played hardball or regular baseball. Mm-hmm. And at the age of maybe 13 or 14, I was playing on a Sunday team with all men. And I was able to play right field. I was the worst player on the team, but I was still young, and they would let me play. And I was good enough to play and help them with their winning games. And that really got me into playing my first games of organized baseball. It was all sandlot and pickup, and they had people that were adults playing on the team. And then I went to high school, and in high school, at Alhambra High School, I made the varsity team. You couldn't play in your freshman year. I made it my sophomore year, and continued to play baseball. And I guess over the course of 1 year, I would play kind of the pickup games on the sandlots and the high school games and the American Legion games and the Sunday games and the Saturday games. I would play maybe 250 baseball games a year, which in my mind was the reason why I learned how to play baseball, because I don't believe you can, unless you play a lot of baseball, you can really learn all the intricacies of baseball without playing the game. You can read about it, you can be taught by other people, but unless you go through the actual playing and having to face all those situations, you really don't learn the game. And ironically, I was picked up by a scout named Dan Crowley, who played in Pacific Coast League Baseball, which was the highest minor league at that time. And he was the man that ran the Yankee Juniors. And the Yankee Juniors were a team sponsored by the New York Yankees. And we used to get the hand-down uniforms of the Yankee players that played in the majors. And of course, the Yankees in those days, and we're talking about the 30s and 40s were a dominating force, and had the great players of Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and what have you. It was quite a thrill to wear an old Yankee uniform. I never got Ruth's uniform or Gehrig's, but I did get Selkirk's uniform, which I treasured like any kid would when you had it. Now, you got to remember, when I was growing up, there was only radio and no TV, and all our games on the West Coast were recreated baseball games. You didn't see a live game. Now, I saw live games of major league teams in spring training because they had the White Sox training out there, the Cubs trained out there, and Pittsburgh. And so I did see live baseball. I got to see some of the great players in spring training. Excuse me. But that's basically my background stage. And I played for the Yankee Juniors for, I guess, 3 years. And I was all set. They had an unwritten rule that if you played with these teams, you would be signed when you got to be of age or out of high school by that team. And there was a scout named Hollis Thurston that scouted for the Pittsburgh Pirates that watched me play. And these scouts all would be together. They're all good friends. Hollis was a major league pitcher. They had a pitcher, Dutch Ruther, who won two games in the 1919 World Series, which was thrown by the White Sox, and used to kid him all the time. The only reason why you won it was fixed game. And he didn't deny it, but he said that's not true. But anyway, I did that, and that's how I kind of grew up. And Thurston stole me away from the Yankees, and his argument was, and I also had another good friend that was helping me with his son, who was my age, to play baseball, and he more or less handled my deal. His name was Harry Johnston, with the STOM, and he went to Mr. Johnson and said, "Look, if he signs with the Yankees, he's going to be in the minor leagues 7 years," which is the case in those days. Mm-hmm. You had to work from D to C to B to A to Double A to Triple A and on up, and there were so few jobs in the major leagues with 16 teams. That's the way you got in the majors, very slowly. So I was off a bonus of $3,000 to sign with the Pirates, and the Yankees offered me a scholarship to USC, University of Southern California, and I debated which way to go, and he convinced me that they also would give me a contract in A ball, which at that time was the third highest league, which would definitely shorten my time to get to the major leagues if I could play. So that was the inducement. And they also said that we'll give you $5,000 if you make the major leagues, which was illegal. You couldn't have anything that wasn't written down. It was a verbal contract. And knowing what I knew then, I said, well, I'll have to trust them, but I don't think I'll ever get the money, because there were a lot of those verbal deals that were made that never happened. Mm-hmm. But as it turned out, I got the money, which was wonderful as far as I was concerned, and really honorable on the Pirates' part. So that was sort of my background in the minors.
And the year...
Is your microphone on?
I don't think it fell off.
Oh, okay. I can hear you. Oh, you...
No, for the tape.
It's on the ground.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So you were signed in what year?
1940. Out of high school.
So you signed in 1940 with the Pirates organization.
Yes, I signed. Graduated from Alhambra High School in June and signed with the Pirates, but didn't play that year. And my first year in baseball was 1941. I went to spring training with the Pirates. And one of the interesting things about that era in baseball, I was in spring training as a member of the Pittsburgh Pirates and participating in the training exercises. And they wouldn't let me bat. And the only way you could take batting practice was if the players that were the regular players on the team would allow you to get in the batting cage. This shows you what baseball was in those days. There were no coaches to make your way for you. You either had to fight your way in. And as it turned out, the star of the Pirate team was a fellow named Bob Elliott, who later on was the MVP with the Boston Braves. I think it was 1947 he was the MVP. And he had been traded away. And so he said, kid, get in there and hit ahead of me. So that's how I got my batting practice. The game has changed considerably since that time.
So you were in the minor leagues for the first 2 years, hitting home runs, and then something interrupted your career.
Well, I was in the minors at Albany my first 2 years. My second year at Albany, I led the Eastern League in home run hitting. I had 14 home runs. And that doesn't sound like much, but in that league, there was a dead ball with some real great pitchers, and the name too, Warren Spahn and Ali Reynolds were in that league. And the lights were very bad, and the ball was dead, and the parks were big, and it was, and in 1942, one fellow in the league hit 300, and that was a guy with the Yankees named Suchak, who never really made it in the major leagues, but it was really interesting. Then 1941, of course, was a very important year for the world, as the Japanese hit Pearl Harbor. And at the time I was playing, I had played my first year of minor league baseball. And December 7th, that morning, I was out riding horseback. And I was scheduled to play in a ball game in the afternoon, baseball game, semi-pro baseball game in the afternoon. And you say, riding horseback, that sounds rather unusual, but Southern California at that time in 1941 had a lot of riding stables, and it was really sort of a Western type thing. It was not unusual to go horseback riding. They had trails all over the hills and mountains and things like that. And of course, I grew up in the era with the movies just starting, and the cowboys and Indians were all sort of part of the whole thing. So the war hit. And I played that afternoon, and the next week, I really believe it was on Monday, I went down and signed up to join the program, the V-12, V-5 program of the Navy, which was to get me into being a Navy flyer. And that was, it changed my whole life. Of course, it changed the world's life, and we couldn't wait to sign up. And people asked me, right now about the disaster with the Twin Towers, and which was a terrible thing to have happen in your own country. Pearl Harbor at the time, Hawaii was not a part of the states, and even that was a terrible thing to happen. And so we couldn't wait to sign up. We couldn't let this thing happen to us. Right. That was more or less the attitude. And all my friends did the same thing. They signed up or were drafted. And that was a big experience, and in the course of 2.5 years in the service, I probably played, I would guess, somewhere around 10 baseball games. I was always at the wrong place at the wrong time for baseball, trying to learn to be a pilot. And ironically, a Hall of Fame baseball player, one of the greatest players of all time, was a teacher for me to how to play soccer, and his name was Charlie Geringer. And we played, but it was part of our exercises was playing soccer, and he was my coach. And he was probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, second baseman around. So that was sort of the background of my service thing. I got my wings, I ended up flying, but never really saw much action. We were doing air save rescue. I flew seaplanes. Mm-hmm. Twins and seaplanes. I flew with PBYs and also the Martin Mariner PBM, and I also did on a submarine work in patrolled areas.
Which theater, Ralph?
Beg your pardon?
Which theater?
That was in the South Pacific.
Oh, okay.
And but not much action. And then I got out in December 1945, and my thought immediately then was get back in shape and get back and play baseball. And in 1946, I went to spring training with the Pirates, and I was really destined to be sent to the Hollywood Stars. team that they worked with in the Pacific Coast League. Mm-hmm. And I had a tremendous spring training. I hit, I believe the number was 13 home runs in spring training. And I earned a job and I opened up in center field for the Pirates in 1946. And as it turned out, I led the league in home runs with 23, beating out Johnny Mize by one. I got very lucky there because Mize got his arm broken while playing an exhibition game against the Yankees. And so he missed quite a few games, and I was able to be the home run champion for that year, my first year in the major league.
And that was club record, 23?
And it was a club record for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Johnny Russo had held the record, I believe, at 22. And it was the most home runs ever hit by a rookie. I think I tagged another player for that, and he played a long way back. I've forgotten his name, but that was how I got started in the home run title race of winning seven consecutive home run titles.
Tell us about your first days in the majors. I mean, you came in obviously instantly successful, but what was that first day like walking into a major league clubhouse?
The first day was, of course, the realization of the one dream I had my whole life, and that was to be a major league ball player. And as a kid growing up, depending on the season, If it was football season, I wanted to be the Red Greens of football. If it were tennis, mm-hmm. I wanted to be the Bill Tilden or the whoever was the king of the tennis. And if it was baseball, I wanted to be Babe Ruth. It was all the dreams I had, all mm-hmm. the things I wanted to do. And of course, I could channel off into baseball, and there was a good reason for that. You couldn't make any money in any other sport. There mm-hmm. was no professional football. There was no professional basketball. There was no professional tennis. And people don't realize that, but there really wasn't. And of course, college football was a big thing. There was no great football leagues that were pros. Mm-hmm. And so you had to either go into boxing or into baseball to really be able to make a living. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to be a boxer. And although I followed the fights when they had the great fighters of Gene Tunney and Jack Dempsey and all those. Max Spear was a great fighter at the time in my era. And as a matter of fact, Max Spear killed a man in the ring. He was a brother of Dolph Camilli. And he fought under the name of Campbell. And his brother, Dolph Camilli, was an outstanding player for the Brooklyn Dodgers and Philadelphia Phillies at one time. So all these things were part of my background growing up, but I had to get into baseball to make a living at it. And my first game in St. Louis, we opened on the road, and I got a base hit that game. And it was off Johnny Beasley, who had been an outstanding pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals before the war and had injured his arm and was trying to make a comeback into Major League Baseball, which he didn't really wasn't able to do. My first home run was in my third game, and it was off of Howie Paulette, who was an outstanding left-handed pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals. And ironically, I hit 369 home runs, and in my career, I never kept track of this, and I don't know if anybody ever did. I hit the home run to right field, and it might have been the only home run I ever hit in my life to right field.
Oh, wow.
And which means I had to be behind the pitch. And it wasn't that well hit, but in those days you couldn't hit the opposite field home runs. It was very difficult because the ball was dead and the ball didn't carry that well and you had to be a pole hitter. But that was my beginning. And it was a day game, and all of them in days at that time were day games. And I remember coming back, and let's say at that time in 46, I would have been 23 years old.
Stand by one
second. Excuse me.
I'm going to get you. You know, funny thing is, I was in homes that didn't have electricity.
Oh, some of my relatives on the Eastern Shore had no plumbing, no electricity.
Yeah, outdoor facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and sorry. We didn't have refrigerators.
Can you, you ready to return?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Go ahead.
Okay, why don't we go back a little bit to your childhood and teams that you followed and who you saw play back on the coast.
My first, of course, I grew up in the where they had the Coast League baseball, which was a very high-class league at that time, and some great old-time ball players would come back down through, after being in the major leagues, would come back down through the high minors and get paid more money in the Coast League, especially, than they made in the major leagues.
Wow.
Because the Coast League was composed of San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, teams, cities that were really big cities at that time. L.A., of course, not like it is now, but really becoming one of the major cities. And so I grew up on that baseball there. My first recollection, excuse me, of Major League Baseball that meant something to me was the 1933 World Series. The Giants and Washington played in that series, and I followed it by radio. And that was when baseball, Major League Baseball, really meant something to me. And then in 1934, the Cardinals and Detroit were in the World Series. And I was in grammar school at that time, and I was in a room in grammar school where I could look out the window and see a very close neighbor of mine. And and this lady, her husband worked, and she was the only one at home. These were all day games. And she would come out on the porch, and she'd whistle. And this is now this whistle ought to be a pretty good whistle, because I was at least 150, 200 yards away from where she was. And she had a system devised so that she could signal to me who was winning the game that was being played that day. And they didn't have the game on in the schoolroom, but it was on radio for her. And so I'd just keep looking out there, and she'd come out, and she'd give me the signs who was ahead. And so that was my really first following of Major League Baseball. And the why I took the Detroit Tigers, I have no idea, but that was my team. And the Cardinals were an extremely colorful team at that time. They had the Gas House Gang, they had Dizzy Dean, they had Pepper Martin, and they had Frankie Frese, and it was really a colorful team. Pepper Martin was at third base, and I, for some reason, went for Detroit. I have no recollection of why it was that way, except they had one of the great hitters of all time in Hank Greenberg, and also the great second baseman Charlie Gehringer. Mm-hmm. And they had Mickey Cochran, and it was a colorful team, too, and it was a great series. And the Cardinals won the seventh game when Dean pitched a shutout, mm-hmm. and they won by 12-0 score. And that was a game where they took Medwick, St. Louis Cardinal left fielder, out of the game. He had run, he had slid hard into third base against Marvin Owen, and Owen and he got in a fight, and then he went out to left field to take his position, and the fans in left field bombarded him with whatever, apples, oranges, whatever, eggs, or whatever they had. And Landis stopped the game and took him out of the game, and that was Kennesaw Mountain Landis, who was the commissioner of baseball, right. And he was brought after the 1919 scandal where the Black Sox, White Sox, Black Sox threw the series, supposedly against the Cincinnati Reds. And so that was my really association with the Tigers. Later on, I never met him until I played with him in 1947 when Hank Greenberg came over with the Pirates, and that was the first time I ever met him. And he was really my idol, and he proved to be the most important factor in my baseball life later on.
How so?
Well, he joined the ball club in 1947, didn't want to play. He had been sold to the Pirates because they didn't want to pay him the money he was trying to make, and it was like somewhere, I guess, I would get $70,000, $60,000 a year. And so they sold him and got rid of him, and he quit. He retired from baseball. And Pittsburgh talked him into coming to the Pirates. And part of the deal was, and he had to be the highest paid player at that time ever, part of the deal was he got X amount of money, and I believe the numbers might have been $70,000 or $80,000. He also was promised some other perks, And he also was promised a horse by John Gambert, who had the Darby Dan Stables. And he was promised a yearling. His wife, Carol Gimble, it was a Gimble family here in New York. They got married in the in 1940, either the end of 46 or the spring of 47. And that horse is really an inducement for him to play and sign. Incidentally, he never got the horse. But he was a very influential on me, because the first day of spring training, he came to me. The training is over for the first day, and all the players went in except Greenberg. And I was going in to change my shower and change uniforms. And he yelled at me, and I had never talked to Hag. And he said, "Hey, kid, how would you like to take some extra batting practice?" I said, "Great." And I came out, and so he said, "I'm Hank Greenberg," and shook my hand. And I said, "Well, I'm Ralph Kiner." And he said, "Kid, I don't think you're going to ever be a great home run hitter." And I thought he was kidding me, because I had led the league in home runs the year before in the National League. He had led the league in the American League with 44 home runs, and the Tigers got rid of him because he was making too much money. I mean, this is the way the game was played in those days. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he said, "I think you stand too far from the plate in the batter's box, and to be a home run hitter, you have to pull the ball, etc." And so he started working with me, and he gave me some tremendous work ethic habits of doing extra work on batting and all these things. And he taught me what was really the greatest things I ever found out about baseball. As Yogi would have said, he learned me as experience. Yogi said that's what he did when he was talking about Bill Dickey teaching him how to catch. So, and also, Hank and I became extremely close friends, and he was the best man in my wedding, and we were close